Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
I am type A personality, and there is a lot of that control part to me. That's never going to change. That's always me. But in that situation, what we're doing and how we're doing it, you know, Bill knows and our coaches know that this is their opportunity and this is Bill's opportunity to do what he wants to do and call what he wants to call. Am I going to be able to be on the headset and say, and try to help him on the front end? Hey, Bill, you might have two downs here. You might be in four down territory here. I'm going to try to do that ahead of time so that he can know situation, how to call play. If there's a, hey, we're going to go for two here, you know, I'll give him that heads up. Or, hey, you know, we're thinking field position.
All righty then.
Joe Ostrowski, Knights on 670 The Score.
That was Matt Nagy back in November. Matt Nagy there talking about his relationship with the offensive coordinator Bill Lazor. And then we get some reports over the last number of days hearing, yeah, Matt Nagy's involved in the offense once again, right after they go through a run of scoring a bunch of points against some poor defenses. Joe Osho, Sports Radio 670 The Score. Thanks for hanging out on this Monday evening. And I want to welcome into the show the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park, Aaron Lemming on Twitter, at Aaron Lemming NFL. He covers the Bears for Bear Report and Windy City Gridiron. And Aaron, your tweet yesterday right after the game really grabbed my attention. You mentioned that you think we all can agree that Matt Nagy was back to calling plays in full in that game against the Packers, back to primarily inside zone runs, minimal rollouts, and rarely took shots down the field. Ego is a serious issue with Nagy, in my opinion. I'm convinced of it. When I assume that you went back and you saw more tape, were you even more convinced of it after this set in for the last 24 plus hours?
Yeah, I couldn't help it, you know, listening to the Nagy back in November. And you know, now it's just, you know, the last 2 weeks, you know, last week I had a sneaking suspicion. I wrote in my 10 thoughts, you know, Windy City Gridiron. And, you know, I said that, you know, it was one of those things where I said, I don't think I'm ever going to be able to prove it, but I'm pretty sure that Matt Nagy at least had his hand in playing, you know, in the play calls against the Jaguars. And then, I mean, this was full blown in week 17 against the Packers. This was full blown Matt Nagy if I've ever seen it. I mean, everything reverted. And it's just, the thing is, and you know, when I say it's an ego thing, people take it so personally. They think that I'm calling him a bad guy. It's not, it has nothing to do with that. It has everything to do with the fact that he has failed as an offensive coordinator, as the offensive play caller for the better part of 3 years. He finally hands things over. Bill Lazor gets a grip on everything. And yes, I get it. It was against porous defenses. But at the same time, there were still some things there that were actually working. And all of a sudden, he can't leave it. He just can't leave it. He's got to put his hand back in the pot. And that's my primary concern when you look at Matt Nagy as a head coach, is I actually like Matt Nagy as the head coach. I don't really have many issues with him as a head coach, but the problem is he cannot seem to stay away from the play calling, and that's where he really hurts himself.
Yeah, it's tough to argue with any of that. I mean, I would just add to that that we've all learned that Mitchell Trubisky is a very flawed player. The head coach doesn't trust the quarterback, but even with Trubisky as the flawed player that he is after 4 years now, we know he can do some things, and at times he has these flash points, and he's sometimes very amazing a few times a year. And then it was just refreshing to see an offensive coordinator call the plays. It's like, okay, yeah, they're easy matchups. There are some layups there, but he's putting his player in a position to succeed. It was just something instead of trying to force him to be a dropback passer.
Well, and that's kind of the thing, right? I think we also learned something else yesterday during the biggest game of the season, and it's simple. For as much as people want to push that Trubisky deserves a contract extension, that the Bears should think about extending him, or that he's got a future in Chicago, yesterday said it all. Matt Nagy does not trust Mitchell Trubisky. It's as simple as that. If he trusted Mitchell Trubisky, we wouldn't have seen the game plan that we saw yesterday. And there's nothing wrong with leaning on the run. The Bears' offense has been going since they've leaned on the run. The issue is within the passing game. It's all these 2 or 3 yard routes, or these little bubble screens at the line of scrimmage that they're throwing to Darnell Mooney and Cole Kmet. Those are the kind of plays when you look at it and you see how many throws they actually made downfield past 10 yards. And you see what the overall design of the offense was, and it was dink and dunk the entire game. Green Bay was basically able to sack whoever they wanted in the box. And that's the issue is defense. When defenses decide to challenge the Bears to throw the ball deep, the Bears fail. Why do the Bears fail? Part of it's offensive play calling, but the other part is they don't trust Trubisky. And that's not even a knock against Trubisky. That's just the reality of the situation. And, you know, obviously they lost yesterday. They're in the playoffs. They're 8-8. You know, you can make whatever you want out of that. But I do think when all comes to end, when the season's over, whether that's a Sunday, whether that's in a week or two from now, who knows? I think the reality is going to be, if Matt Nagy's here, which I think he's going to be, Mitchell Trubisky's not going to be here. There's too much of a fracture there with trust. It's just not a good mix. I don't really know how else to put it. And I don't know how many times that we have to see it consecutively and throughout a season for people to truly understand that, you know, through if it's his fault or whether it's his fault or not his fault with Trubisky, this is just isn't working. They don't trust him, and the same things against decent defenses are going to continue to rear their ugly head. It's just how it goes.
That's what happens. We have these Packer games, and you're naturally going to have these big picture conversations. We'll get to Bears Saints, of course, coming up here, but the reports that we've seen, and I don't even think we need the reports, but say Matt Nagy's safe and 2 years under contract, I would agree with that. Zero losing seasons in 3 years. The McCaskies aren't going to fire him. So he's safe. Do you think Ryan Pace is also safe?
See, I don't think he is. I don't know why I believe that. I really don't. But I think part of it comes down to obviously you have the whole contract dispute right now. Some people are reporting that he's got 1 year left on his deal, so he's going into a lame duck season next season. Or you've got some people who think that maybe he's matched up with Matt Nagy. Nobody knows, and that to me is telling. And I don't know, the fact that nobody can seem to get right information on that is even more concerning to me. As to, you know, why is this such a secret? You know, that doesn't make any sense. But no, I don't think Ryan Pace is overly safe at this point. And I don't know. I think if the Bears would have lost in the way that they lost yesterday and the Cardinals would have had Kyler Murray throughout the entire game, I think we're talking about a very different situation. And I think the Bears in some way, shape or form, maybe not Matt Nagy, but I think in some way, shape or form, they are absolutely involved with all the Black Monday firings that are going on.
So, so if Ryan Pace, if they move on from him and then they're going to start their search, or they're going to bring in a firm, or Ernie Accorsi is going to come in and tell them who to hire in a few weeks from now after all the other GM vacancies are filled?
Well, and that's kind of the problem, right? Is you got a situation where, and I can't tell you, you know, just off the top of my head, but this has to be one of the busiest off seasons in terms of teams hiring GMs. I mean, there's GMs dropping left and right. I mean, John Elway all of a sudden is stepping into a different role. I mean, there's just all sorts of different things going on right now. I mean, this is really not a good time for the Bears to be looking for a GM, which I don't know if that's going to weigh into their decision at all. But again, you bring up a bigger point, and this is the issue that the Bears have continued to face over the years, over the decades, where you have the same people at the top making the decisions. Whether you want to blame Phillips, whether you want to blame the McCaskies, those are the two common threads there. You've got George in Virginia, and you've got Ted Phillips. Those are the common threads where the common mistakes continue to happen and to happen and to happen. And, you know, here's the thing. Obviously, if you're a Bears fan, you're on Twitter or whatever it may be, you know who has the information. You know that Brad Biggs from the Chicago Tribune is a guy that is – he's connected. He's as connected as it possibly gets. The fact that he's even throwing out names right now, and granted, he did note in his article, his 10 thoughts earlier, that it was more speculation and just kind of somebody throwing it, you know, two different unconnected sources throwing a name around. But the fact that there's even a name for a potential GM candidate right now from the Kansas City Chiefs should tell you that there's definitely something brewing at Halas Hall, depending on what happens this weekend, in my opinion.
Wow. Huh. If I have behind door number one, Nagy's fired, door number two, Pace is fired, or door number three, Phillips is gone, and there's a change in the power structure, football czar is brought in, Ryan Pace has a football boss, which would you choose?
I would absolutely choose number three. I think what the Bears have lacked for a long time is just that leadership and that knowledge. You know, nothing against the McCaskies, but the fact is they don't know football. I don't really know how else to put it at this point. I mean, just look at the mistakes that the Bears have made. And, you know, I don't know. I say these things all the time. Maybe it's a little bit different on the radio. I don't know. But just the reality of it is, okay, look at the game yesterday. Look at the situation that the Packers have been in, and then look at the situation the Bears have been in. Let's just compare the last 25 or 30 years. Okay, granted, the Packers have underachieved in some ways because, let's be honest here, they have two Hall of Fame quarterbacks, and they've won one Super Bowl to date, you know, with that. But here's the reality. I mean, since Brett Favre came in, the Bears have won – less than 16 games against the two combined quarterbacks. And you look at what the Packers have had at quarterbacks versus what the Bears have had at quarterback. That is a giant common thread. And I mean, just look at ever since Brett Favre came in, how lopsided this quote unquote rivalry has been. I mean, the Bears had owned this thing up until Brett Favre stepped in, and all of a sudden the tide has turned. And that's kind of the thing, is you can go back and you can look at different franchises that have been around for a while, and you can look at the common trends that they all have. The Bears have a common trend with running. They have a common trend with linebackers. There's different things that they have. And you look at a team like the Packers, who have had ultimately more success, and you look at their common trends. And where does it start? It starts at quarterback. I mean, there's just so many different things. The thing is the Bears have one of the most attractive organizations in all of professional sports. They basically can get almost any candidate that they want, any time that they want. But they continue to make the weirdest decisions. Everybody thought Chris Ballard was going to be the guy. You know, before that, you know, it was even the head coaching thing. Instead of Mark Trestman, they went Bruce Arians. There's always some weird thing that they do. And again, that all starts at the top. Whether it's the McCaskies, whether it's Ted Phillips, there's clearly an issue there. And like I said, if you're giving me all three of those options, then a power change at the top, where it all fundamentally starts, is where it's going to happen. Because here's the thing. If they fire Ryan Pace, who's going to be making the decision? Like you said, are they going to bring in Ernie Accorsi again? I highly doubt it. Then who's going to make the decision? It's going to be Ted Phillips and the McCaskies again. And here we are just going in this vicious circle over and over.
Yeah, I agree with you. I was just talking about it a little bit ago before you jumped on the line. And I was just like, you know, that would excite me. If there's change in how they operate, making me believe that maybe there's a reason that they can be a contender for multiple years at some point down the road. Because for whoever comes in next, if it's not Ryan Pace here, there's going to be a big mess to clean up. That's for darn sure. Joe Ostrowski here on Sports Radio 670 The Score. My guest, Aaron Lemming, does great stuff. Bear Report and Windy City Gridiron. Make sure you're following him on Twitter at Aaron Lemming NFL. Let's revisit yesterday first, before we get to what we're going to see coming up on Sunday, of course. So Kamara's probably going to be out there for the New Orleans Saints. It's kind of amazing, Aaron, that they were in that game halfway through the fourth quarter before the collapse here. And we should be focusing on Matt Nagy and the offense and Trubisky. That's a big part of what this season is all about. But, man, they are spending more money on defense than any team in the NFL. If they want to have a chance at being anything in this league, they've decided that they need to be a top five defense, and they are far from it, and they're not taking advantage of opportunities with those three dropped interceptions yesterday.
Is there one coordinator in the league? And I don't mean to be negative. I mean, but there's on the playoffs. But I don't mean to be negative here. But let me ask you this: is there one coordinator in the entire league that has done less with the amount of talent that Chuck Pagano has on the defense side of the ball? This is crazy. He has almost the same defense that Vic Fangio does. And again, here we are. We're not talking about a low scoring game where, you know, Aaron Rodgers just made a few more plays and they won the game because the offense couldn't score enough points. Obviously the offense was a little bit of an issue, but man, the defensive side of the ball. And it's funny because if you go back and you really, the Bears are always a long shot to win this game. And that's not because I think the Bears are overly horrible. The fact that the Packers are playing really good football, the Packers are playing excellent football. They just, you know, the week before that, you know, what happened to the Bears, they blew out the Titans. It's a situation where if you really look and see what they've done, I mean, they have been very dominant. They've been very dominant in the first half. And that was actually one of the things I highlighted going into that game, is they needed to keep things close going in the second half of the game. The Bears followed a pretty solid script, like you pointed out. I mean, they were in the game. They were 5 points down midway through the fourth quarter. And obviously the fourth down conversion didn't happen. But then, again, you look at the defense, you have a situation where they finally made some stops. You have a situation where Aaron Rodgers made a terrible throw. Kendall Vildor has to come up with that ball. They dropped three interceptions in that game. Aaron Rodgers doesn't throw interceptions. He doesn't throw three interceptions. You've got to at least convert on one or two of those. And that was a huge point in the game. Again, the Bears, you know, it didn't feel overly close throughout the game, in my opinion. But at the same time, the Bears did a great job of following the script of how they could at least keep the game close and, you know, try to pull out a win in the final minutes against the Packers. But unfortunately, when it came down to it, the dink and dunk, the, you know, the 2 or 3 yard chunk runs that they were getting, all of that came down, you know, to a screeching halt. And I know a lot of people are going to look at it and say, why did they throw the ball on fourth and one? I mean, they've done a lot of QB sneaks. You know, at some point in time, the Packers are going to figure it out. I don't really have an issue with the play call. I think Jimmy Graham ran the wrong route. I think that's what it was. He was the first read, and he ended up having to go to Allen Robinson. But unfortunately, I think we're also seeing the talent gap here, where you have a team like the Packers who, under Matt LaFleur, have lost 6 total games in 2 years in the regular season. I mean, that's incredible. And that's an incredible turnaround for a lot of people, including myself, that thought the Packers were kind of on their way out and then Aaron Rodgers were on their way out. And all of a sudden, they've turned it around. But you just kind of saw the talent gap between the two teams, where the Packers can make mistakes and they can still win the game. They can win the game by 19 points, and where the Bears can't capitalize on a few different mistakes and they lose the game by 19 points.
Yeah, no question. It was very frustrating. And both teams get in the red zone. When Green Bay gets there, it's touchdown, touchdown, touchdown. And then after the first drive, the Bears did everything right. It was just, we're going to settle for field goal. We're not going to take advantage of these turnovers and turn those into touchdowns. But not all the offense yesterday. They didn't put up enough points, but it wasn't just on them, on the defense as well. When you look at this Saints game, what comes to mind here, aside from Kamara probably being back on the field?
You know, it's funny. I not to say I like the matchup, but I do like the matchup better than they match up against Packers. I do think they actually have a chance of keeping this game closer. Obviously, Michael Thomas didn't play, you know, in the first game and you know, earlier in the regular season. And I think the Saints are definitely hitting their stride at the right time. But I do think in terms of matchups, I do think that this is going to be a better matchup for the Bears. But again, this is going to come down to, you know, basically two factors. You got Drew Brees, who's already said that he's basically done after this year. I think that was reported, what was it, yesterday by, who was it, Schefter or somebody at ESPN? I can't remember who it was, but there was some reports.
He's got his TV deal ready. He's got his TV deal ready. He's going right to the booth.
Exactly. He's a smart guy. But here's the thing. Drew Brees isn't the same quarterback, at least physically, but mentally, he's still there. He's going to be a lot the same way as Aaron Rodgers. He's going to exploit mismatches. I can tell you right now, if Roquan Smith isn't on the field and Jalen Johnson isn't on the field, the Bears are going to have some trouble on defense again. I mean, that's just what it is. So those are the kind of things where I won't pick the Bears to win, but I do think that overall, I do think that really, you know, any team in the NFC right now, the Packers are the worst matchup for the Bears. I don't know how much better of a matchup this is going to be with the Saints, but I do think that they can keep it close. I mean, this was a team that took them into overtime and had chances to win the game, you know, midway through the season. Obviously, the two teams are different right now, and I think the biggest difference with the Saints right now is their defense is playing at a very, very high level, which once again, you know, we're going to have to evaluate this offense. We're going to have to evaluate Trubisky. This could be Trubisky's last tryout, per se, before they move into the offseason, but this is going to be another test because let's just be honest here. The Saints defense is better than the Packers defense. They've been playing a lot better than the Packers defense over the last 6 or 7 weeks. So, I like the matchup better than I do against the Packers, but I still don't like the matchup, and I don't like the Bears' chances of winning because, let's be honest, they're an 8-8 team. They got in a really weird way. I mean, hey, it was fantastic that they were able to, you know, find a way to get in the playoffs after losing 6 straight. But the Bears just aren't – they're not a Super Bowl contender. And, you know, one thing you pointed out just a little bit ago was the fact that this game is being played on Sunday, which, guess what? Alvin Kamara, as long as he stays asymptomatic, he can come back and play. And, again, Michael Thomas is probably going to play as well. That does not bode well for any team, especially a team like the Bears who are struggling defensively and offensively. You just don't know what you're going to get.
As I'm looking at this Bears schedule, we know over the last month they've played some of the worst defenses in the league, and that's fair. And it's not like Green Bay. It's a very good defense, and they weren't able to convert in the red zone enough, not enough on fourth down. Maybe not as a – you know, I think Nagy could have been a little more aggressive because you know you need to score touchdowns against Rodgers. But, Aaron, as I'm going back through the schedule here and how it just played out, the Bears are going to be playing the best defense on Sunday since week 8. Against the New Orleans Saints, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's, yeah.
Like, when you think about Tennessee, Minnesota twice, Green Bay twice, Jacksonville, Houston, Detroit, like, that, the last time they played a really good defense was week 8, this team.
Yeah, and to be completely fair, this defense that the Bears are going to be seeing on Sunday is a lot better than that defense in week 8 was. I mean, but again, this is another, if you want to call it a test, this is another test. This is another test for Bill Lazor or Matt Nagy, whoever's calling plays at this point. And, you know, more importantly, this is probably the final test for Trubisky. You know, there's a lot of talk, and I don't know how much of the pregame shows you watch or anything like that. There was a lot of talk during the pregame shows yesterday that, you know, this was Trubisky's chance to shine. And not to say he had a terrible game by any means, but let's be honest, this was a lot of what we've seen before. So, you know, it's one of those situations where they're in a spot right now where you're kind of putting off the inevitable, right? You know you're not a Super Bowl contender. You get in the playoffs. Let's see what happens. I mean, really, if they win a playoff game, I mean, let's just say they beat the Saints. I mean, that's already a pretty big win, all things considered, within the season. But then again, what are you going to do this offseason? I mean, we talked about Ryan Pace. Trubisky's another one, Allen Robinson, Kyro Santos has all of a sudden become a question. Like, what are you going to do there? Are you going to tag him? Are you going to sign him? What are you going to do? I mean, there's a lot of decisions to make, and there's not a lot of cap space for them to work with, even if the cap ends up bumping up to 100 or 195, or I think it's 190 or 195 million, like they've been talking about with this new 17th game that they're going to have starting next year. I mean, the Bears are going to be in a very interesting spot, which, once again, kind of circling back to the whole GM thing. This, you know, the Bears are a charter franchise, but when you look at what a new GM is going to have to walk into, there is a lot to figure out. And it's weird because they still have a lot of talent, but they're low on resources, and it's going to take a very, very, very perfect offseason for them to be able to salvage anything from this current window that they have that seems all but shut at this point.
I hate it when teams operate like this. Every next game is going to decide everything in the organization. The power structure, the future of the quarterback, future of the general manager, maybe the future of the head coach. I can't stand it, but that's where we are. So you threw out the scenario, shock the world, biggest underdog of the weekend of the 6 wildcard games. Bears win, everybody's back, there's a party, they've exceeded expectations. Then they move on to the next round, divisional round. Okay, cool. That we know what's happening there. But when you look at these different scenarios, does it matter if they lose the way they lose? Like, if they lose a one-score game versus getting, I guess, kind of embarrassed pants by Sean Payton in that national TV spot, first round of the playoffs, is there a big difference to how they're going to react in the offseason?
I think so. I think, well, maybe not a big difference, but I do think, you know, if they're teetering one way or another, I mean, I could definitely set them off. Because, I mean, the Bears have been embarrassed on national TV enough over the last few years. You know, this game's going to be a Nickelodeon. How weird is that? A playoff game on Nickelodeon.
All
the 7-year-olds in the entire country are going to be watching the Bears get the crap beat out of them. You know, who wants to see that? Here's the thing. I think that the Bears are in such a strange position right now. I mean, I wish I could sit here and tell you confidently one way or another, I had a great feeling for what was going to happen, or I knew something was going to happen. But I mean, this was a team that started off 5-1. You know, it was talked about that both, you know, Nagy and Pace's jobs are safe. And then they went on a 6-game losing streak, and it looked like everybody was going to lose their job. You know, everybody is hoping for a tank. And then all of a sudden they win 3 out of the last 4, lose the last game of the season in really not great fashion. And they make it into the playoffs. So, man, I wish I could sit here and tell you that, you know, that there's going to be crazy changes if they get blown out. But again, this is the Bears we're talking about, and nobody can predict what's going to happen. You know, in reality, I think, you know, the Bears fan in me wants to say, tear it all down, everybody goes. But then at the same time, you look at some of these organizations that have continued to stay bad over the years that are finally starting to figure it out. And a lot of it comes down to continuity. And I don't know if the continuity is just Matt Nagy and they bring in the right GM, or if it's just keeping both of them and trying to figure it out. I don't know. Because my concern with Ryan Pace moving into this offseason, if he continues to be the GM of this team, is he's going to have another one of those desperate off seasons where he kicks the can down the road with cap space. He's going to, you know, do whatever he needs to do. And then he's going to go out and he's going to spend wildly enough on a player or two where it's going to put them in even a bigger hole. I mean, he's starting to follow the Mickey Loomis footsteps. And that's what concerns me. And that's what concerns me about keeping Pace around, especially if he really is a lame duck, if he's really got 1 year left on his contract moving into next season. That's concerning, because what does he have to lose at that point? If he turns things around, then all of a sudden, you know, that's something to add to his resume, and he stays with the Bears. And if things blow up, then, well, all of a sudden, all those cap issues that you got, well, no longer his problem. So that's the bigger concern that I have, where if it was me personally, if the Bears lose, there's got to be some change. And I think there will be. I think probably one way or another at this point. I mean, Chuck Pagano's at least got to go. He's at least got to be the scapegoat at this point, right? I mean, last year it was, you know, the offensive coordinator and the offensive lines coach. I mean, somebody's got to be the scapegoat for what's going on here. So I would assume at minimum he's gone. But I do think if they lose badly enough, I don't know. I just have to, again, it's based on nothing. It's just my gut feeling. I think that Pace's job is much more at risk moving into Sunday than Matt Nagy. And I don't know why. Again, I have no clue. It's just my gut feeling.
Interesting. Yeah, it's something I really wasn't considering. I assumed that he was absolutely safe, but hey, man, like, wins against Houston, Jacksonville, and Minnesota shouldn't save anyone after a 6-game losing streak. So some interesting points. So I guess maybe they won't run it all back if they go 8-8 and then they get housed in the first round of the playoffs. Maybe that's not how they're going to operate. It's going to be fascinating to watch. Aaron Lemming from the Bear Report, Windy City Gridiron. Follow him on Twitter at Aaron Lemming NFL. Aaron, enjoyed the visit as always. I'm sure we'll be talking again soon as we move forward to the fascinating offseason, man.
Absolutely, yeah. Thanks again for having me on. And yeah, I'm sure the next time we talk, it'd be even more fun stuff to talk about one way or another, right?
You got it. Thanks, Aaron. I kind of hate that we have a playoff game on deck, but we're already looking at the offseason. This is Bears country. We just to have playoff games, I guess that's an accomplishment, and I know it's the 8-8 record, because you look on the other side in the AFC, you needed to be 11-5 to get into the playoffs, and in the NFC, well, yeah, you got a couple of quality teams on top, but then as you move on to Tier 2, Tier 3, it gets pretty weak pretty quickly. Joe Ostrowski here, Sports Radio 670. The Score. You may have missed the news with all this bear stuff going on over the last couple of days. The Cubs have a new TV play-by-play announcer, and I'm thrilled about it. We'll get to that on the other side. We'll also hear from Olin Krutz later on this hour. Joe Ostrowski here on Sports Radio 670. The Score and the Radio.com app.
Was I in the box or was I at first base?
No, you were in the box.
When I looked up.
No, you were in the box. It was pregame, and I was asking you. You were in a stretch. You weren't swinging it great, and you were swinging it the first pitch a lot. And so Dorky Boog, you know, me and my hitting video, said, hey, how come you're swinging the first pitch so much? You don't get a lot of first pitch strikes, was my point. I said, you don't. So why are you doing it if they're not throwing you a lot of strikes? And your point was, because it's probably the only time I'm going to get a fastball. So here's what happened. Tim Stauffer, it splits the plate at 91. Now watch the hitter.
Watch a head shake. Watch a head shake. What was that? What are we talking
That's
about?
That's why you're up there and I'm down
that
here.
Was
now zip
absolutely
it.
Beautiful right
That's
there.
Funny.
That's the new voice of the Cubs telling that story. John Boog Shombi. Joe Ostrowski with you, Sports Radio 670, The Score. Yeah, that news came out earlier today that Boog Shombi is taking over for Len Casper on Marquee. And I'm pleasantly surprised. First, just a little background for everybody listening who was a little confused by that clip. Mike Rankin, our executive producer. Mike, can you explain what exactly that was with Boog Shombi? And we heard from Chipper Jones there as well.
Yeah, it's a fun little interaction because, you know, Chipper and Boog work together in the booth. And, you know, prior when Chipper was still playing, he was in the box and, you know, they had their conversation. Like Boog explained, he said, what are you doing? You know, swinging at the first pitch, you're making a ton of outs. So, Boog, you know, Chipper keeps that in mind. He steps in the box, takes the first pitch, it's right down the middle, and then he steps out, looks right at Boog, who's calling the game in the booth, and gives him a little head shake. So, I thought that was pretty funny. And I think, Joe, too, that's an example of the fun loving. He doesn't take himself too seriously, the nature that Boog brings to a broadcast. And I think he's got a great voice to call baseball. So I'm a fan of this hire.
Man, I am pleasantly surprised, and I was annoyed when I heard about the Chris Myers already kind of in the mix, doing some fill-in work, and there was a rumor that he would be the guy. And then I would see him on these NFL games, and I'd get more bothered. I'm like, I can't do 162 with this guy as the voice of the Cubs. I am pleasantly surprised. And people that don't know, Mike Rankin covers the White Sox. And so you're a huge baseball guy. You always have been. And I'm trying not to be a homer here, but we are so blessed in this city. Like, baseball voices, TV, radio, they matter to you. Like, they're with you all summer long, and hopefully we'll have an extended season. Don't know that we'll get 162, but it'll be much more than 60 games that we saw this past season. Just in this town, to have on Cubs TV, you've got Boog and Deshays. Cubs radio here on The Score, you've got Pat and Ron. Sox TV, Benetti and Stone, and Sox Radio now, if Casper, that is going to be strange for a while to say, but Sox Radio, Casper and DJ, we are so damn lucky. Like, where's the weakness? Those are four really strong booths.
Joe, and it's like it extends even further, and we should start with Pat Hughes, future Hall of Famer. Isn't he on the Hall of Fame already as a broadcaster? He was. He was inducted last year, wasn't he? So, I mean, I should know this. Yeah, right. So, you know, the prestige is there for Pat Hughes. We know that. And before Ron Coomer, you had Ron Santo. And, of course, we have to shout out the late Ed Farmer, outstanding on White Sox radio, in my opinion. I loved listening to Farmer, especially when the Sox were in a rough stretch. Yeah, he left it all out on the broadcast. He told it like it was. And I think it kind of resonates with listeners, too. You see the everyday, the resignation that it comes with being a broadcaster, you see it, you live it as a fan does. Because from a national perspective, Boog coming from the booth where he every so often calls Cubs Sox games is maybe a little different when he's following this Cubs team, especially in the transition now. You know, seeing the frustrations that the Cubs fans are feeling, I'm excited to see how he turns, you know, that into his profession. But also, Joe, like you were mentioning, the number of names that we have, especially on Bulls as well. Adam Amin coming in. Stacey King's a lot of fun.
How about it?
Who was it before? Yeah. Neil Funk, too. Johnny Red Kerr was on the broadcast. Outstanding personalities. Chuck Swirsky, Bill Wennington on the call here on The Score.
No, and the Hawks TV crew is terrific as well. For, you know, I'm not a big Hawks fan, but You know, I mean, Pat Foley, I mean, come on, at Eddie O? Like, we are really lucky. Now, how about giving them some winning teams?
And what is it? You know? Is it John Weidman, too, on the radio call for...
John Weidman,
yeah. I'm sorry.
And Troy Murray, yeah.
Yeah, and Troy Murray. Yeah, they're outstanding, too. But that's nice. Yeah, that would be nice to give them something to cheer about. Hey, the White Sox, by the way, Len Casper, looking the right side of the town in terms of colors here. I mean, this is going to be a fun team to watch, and I think... that radio booth, and nothing against Andy Mazur either, by the way, but I loved Len Casper on a national level. When he would call, Joe, those games on Fox, I thought he was outstanding.
He wants to call a World Series. Well, he went to the Sox side because there's a good chance that he's going to be called a World Series in the coming years. Even with Tony La Russa as manager, I still believe that's the case. Even though I did say after La Russa, I'm out on the Sox for the World Series, but, you know, I think any manager would win a whole lot of games, and the White Sox are going to do that this coming year on the South Side. I was talking about this yesterday, that the Bears needed the playoff expansion to get in, and the Hawks needed them to flip the NHL format. Like, okay, let's, what are we going to have? 24 teams in? Yeah, let's have 24 teams in. You don't have to call them the playoff teams, but let 24 teams in so we can have that Chicago market and the Blackhawks. Or, like, they needed that. So maybe we won't need that help from the leagues moving forward. That would certainly be a nice thing. Speaking of the Bears, by the way, Joe Ostrowski here, Sports Radio 670, The Score. Thanks for listening. Speaking of the Bears, let's go back to this morning because Olin Krutz must listen, as always, and every Monday morning he's on the Mully and Haas show. And take a listen to some of his reactions to Bears-Packers, just this organization making the postseason at 8-8, and looking ahead to the Saints, Bears 10-point underdogs to New Orleans on Sunday.
Mully and Haas, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. It is always a warm Christmas-style story every time we get a chance to talk to Olin Krutz, brought to you by Alpamonte Nissan, Alpamonte Nissan, Melrose Park on North Avenue, or apnissan.com. Good morning, Olin. How are you?
Morning, guys. How's it going, man?
Well, you know, we're trying to determine whether backing into the playoffs is a successful season. Getting a chance to, yeah, there's the bandwagon, get on board. they did back into the playoffs, but they made the playoffs. And, and it's embittering to lose 35-16 to the Packers, to consistently lose to the Packers. But the playoffs, new opportunity, new start to a season. Does it change anything in your opinion, Olin?
You know, not the way they played yesterday. Obviously, that leaves a bad taste in your mouth. But they get another chance at this, and they get to go play the New Orleans Saints, who are a good football team, who have a very good defense and offense. They combine both sides of the ball, just like the Green Bay Packers do. And we get to see if these Chicago Bears, we keep waiting for them to have a really good performance against a good football team, and it just hasn't happened yet. Except for against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers earlier this year with Nick Foles starting at quarterback. But as you guys talked about probably already this morning, you're starting to worry about this championship defense that we thought we had. And we've been worrying about them since they came out of the bye week. And, you know, the Packers put 41 on them then. And we heard a lot of stuff about maybe they're just a little tired. Well, they've rested now 5 or 6 weeks here. So hopefully we get a little better performance out of them in New Orleans. But we've been seeing this slow deterioration of the defense now for a while, and we're kind of worrying about it. And it shows up again yesterday, even when I think they won time of possession by almost 10 minutes. They still couldn't keep Aaron Rodgers out of the end zone. And before, even though this is the highest scoring offense in the NFL with maybe the best player in the NFL, Aaron Rodgers, before we had that defense that could play with anybody, that would stop anybody, slow anybody down, and they're just not playing at that level anymore. And that's what worries you the most about the Chicago Bears team, because they finally have the offense that we've all been talking about they needed to complement their championship defense, but it doesn't complement an average defense.
So as the Chicago Bears team, you move on to the Chicago Bears franchise, how concerned are you that they will look at an 8-8 season and sneaking into an expanded playoff field and let that mask some of the things that are wrong with this franchise and maybe not address some of the things that are limiting and apply a championship standard to what's going on at Halas Hall?
Well, obviously, like you guys have been watching and been a part of this franchise for a long time, so you worry about that, right? Because I think they've had two or three winning seasons the last 10, 11 years, and we've all been watching this go on for a long time. You know, hire guys like Phil Emery, Mark Trestman, and just go through it and never really improve and get to the point where you're consistently making the playoffs or at least having, you know, four or five winning seasons through, you know, in a decade. And that's been going on for a long time here at Halas Hall. So obviously you have to worry about the decisions that are being made up there and what decisions they're going to make up there. You know, do they look at things like when, you know, the last 2 years in Indianapolis, Pagano and Ted Monachino, who's the senior defensive assistant outside linebacker coach for the Chicago Bears, were ranked 30th in the league in Indianapolis. The last 2 years that he was with the Colts, and Monachino was the defensive coordinator. So we bring those two guys here to run the Chicago Bears defense, and they've been dropping in the rankings since they got here. So those are the kind of things you hope people up there at Halas Hall are looking at, because some of these things that happen to the Chicago Bears, if you just study the hires they're making and look into the history of what's going on, you can kind of see these things coming, but it doesn't seem like they do up there at Halas Hall.
I think there's a couple of – it's a really rich kind of vein of interest, I think, for people. You know, we can look at the immediate future of the general manager, of the head coach, of whomever you want, and try to draw conclusions about what's going to happen. I think that one of the interesting things to keep an eye on, if everybody is back, you know, normally you'll roll over the contracts of the assistant coaches. Now, if they make that incumbent upon – the coach being there after the year. You know, one of the things, when you talk about firing a head coach, if a guy's got $5 million on his deal or $10 million, if it's 2 years, you're also talking about the assistant contracts. So you're adding another, if you got 24 assistants, you're adding another $12 to $14 million onto that coach. You're talking about not $5 million, but $17 to $20 million if you're clearing out a staff. And that's going to be something to really keep an eye on in terms of what happens with all these assistants in terms of rolling over their contracts?
Yeah, it's a big decision, right? I mean, I think that's what you're saying right there. It's a huge decision when you try to decide if, okay, are we moving in the right direction? And I think really the question that you have to ask themselves up there at Halas Hall is, are Ryan Pace and Coach Nagy two young football guys learning on the job? And they've been here, you know, Ryan Pace has been here 6 years. Coach Nagy is going to be going his fourth year next year. Are they getting better at what they're doing? And if you believe that, then that's the reason you keep them, right? But the problem with that is we just saw a guy, I bet that Joe Douglas, the general manager for the Jets, thought Adam Gase was improving, and he learned a lot from what happened to him in Miami. But obviously that didn't work for him in New York. So if you make the wrong decision there, and this is why these are big decisions there for them up there at Halas Hall, because if these guys aren't improving, they continue to make the same mistakes, then you're looking at, you know, a couple, two, three, four, 5 years of really bad football, and you're just caught up in just the same cycle that you've been caught up in. And there's no easy answers to any of this, right? And you just have to put as much work and as much study into it and then make the best decisions that you can. And hopefully the people who make the decisions make the right decisions.
Going from the big picture to some of the details yesterday, Olin, mm-hmm. when you look at Cole Kmet's emergence late in the season, he has been very productive, but he has now put the football on the ground a couple times. If you're his position coach, if you're his head coach, how do you address that with a young player? And what do you think about what? Is it just an extra effort? Is it a bad habit that you want to get in front of? How do you address what's happened with Cole Kmet? Because that was another fumble that you just can't have.
No, you can't have it. And Cole Kmet knows that better than anybody. But, man, do you love the way that kid plays football, his rookie year here, the passion he plays with, the effort that he's giving you out there is everything you need from your football team to beat the Green Bay Packers there. And he fumbles that ball, and you hope that, and we talked about this on the NBC Sports Chicago, the post-game show, that as a coach, you got to kind of foresee these things coming, and maybe they did, but when he's giving all that effort on his first two catches, you saw him there. He didn't even go to the ground. I think four or five Green Bay Packers hit him on his first catch, and you see him giving all that effort. As a coach, you know, we're watching the game, and the first thing we're saying is, all right, that's great, but don't put the ball on the ground, right? Because you've seen this too many times. That's usually when it happens, is when a guy's giving a bunch of effort and guys are just pulling at that ball all the time. So as a coach, hopefully you foresee that and tell him on the sideline, look, man, I mean, if we want to fight for all those yards, but make sure you're being smart with that football. And then when you get a guy like that, David, who runs that hard, you create drills for him in practice where he's running that hard and someone's pulling at the ball, so he's used to that situation. But you do not want to take that away from him. You do not want to take that kind of effort away from Cole Kmet. You want him fighting for every yard, but just hold on to that ball, because if you give the Green Bay Packers a takeaway like they got yesterday, they're going to be hard to beat, because, you know, we got one on that fumbled punt, right? But we only got 3 points out of that, and that really hurt. Obviously, not scoring touchdowns in the red zone really hurt us. But, you know, we had to win the turnover. The Bears had to win the turnover battle yesterday, and they did not. And that kind of hurt them, obviously. And I think they end up winning it. No, they end up losing the turnover battle. But after that fumble punt, and then they have Cole Kmet give it back, even though he's giving all that effort, that hurts. But obviously, I'm not taking away his effort and the way he's fighting out there by any means.
This segment with Olin Krutz is sponsored by Elmhurst BMW. You earned it. You deserve it. Shop online at ElmhurstBMW.com. And Olin, you know, when we talk about the Bears under Matt Nagy and what's going on, the problem has been scoring. The problem has been not getting touchdowns, and certainly they went through their four-game streak of 30-plus points, and things seemed to change. And when you look at it, over the course of that time, I think their red zone numbers were like 70-something percent, which is great for a four-game winning streak against subpar defenses. I think Green Bay has been better than that all year long, and that's the key, is scoring touchdowns in the red zone. They did it. The Bears couldn't. What happens against New Orleans? That's a team that rushes the passer pretty well.
Yeah, and that's what we're all waiting to see, right? Because, look, everybody keeps saying that they were doing that. They were scoring those points. They were moving the ball against pretty bad defenses against subpar defenses. Well, here's a real way you have to say it. They were literally doing it against the worst defenses in the league, right? By rank, these guys were the worst in the league. The Vikings are the only ones who were 27th or 28th. The other ones were 32, 32nd, 31st, and 30th in the league. So they were the worst. And the Vikings now, the Bears scored all those points against them. They went out and gave 52 points to the Saints. So they were pretty bad after all the injuries they had too. And we've been waiting. We say, okay, we want to see them against a pretty good defense. And they go play the Packers and only get 16 points out of it. So you start to worry again that they don't score points. And here we are again, below 17 points a game. And you know, these are just facts. You're just looking at the stats, the statistics, and what they're doing against good football teams. And you're saying, okay, well, the offense does look good. They come out yesterday. They go through that first drive. They score a touchdown on the first drive. And you say, okay, man, here we go. They are different. They can score against these teams. And then they don't. And then they only end up with 16 points the whole game. And the Saints, like we talked about, are a better defense than the Green Bay Packers. And you worry about, okay, now are we going to get more than 20 points? And they're going to – the Saints' offense is averaging close to 30 points a game, the Packers are averaging 31 points a game, and it just doesn't seem like a good matchup. But the great thing about football, guys, in the NFL and the playoffs is everything starts again, and every week you get a chance to prove, you know, say people like me, the Bears can prove me wrong. I hope they do. Prove me wrong. Go out there, score a bunch of points against a good defense for the first time when you have Mitch Trubisky at quarterback. Because, look, if we're speaking honestly here and say, okay, when they played against good teams, every time they competed, every time they were close, it was Nick Foles at quarterback. And again, this thing that Mitch Trubisky carries over his head is that he has good games against bad teams. And he doesn't have good games against good teams, and the team doesn't compete. Now, a lot of yesterday had to do with the defense, and the defense not holding up their end of the bargain and keeping Aaron Rodgers out of the end zone, harassing him with that pass rush that we paid so much money for, making tackles on a 3rd and 8 when you do get the pass rush. So the defense just is not working well together right now. It looks like they're busting a lot of coverages, not stopping the run, not getting to the quarterback. When they do get to the quarterback, they don't make the tackle. They got to give more effort. They got to get those interceptions when it hits them in the hands, especially someone like Eddie Jackson, who's getting paid all that money. It seems like every week you hear a great quote from Eddie Jackson. I like to see him get a great tackle or a great interception instead of a great quote.
You're right. You're right. He hasn't played well since he got paid, Olin. There's no coincidence there, and there's no denying that. He has talked a lot this year and done very little.
Yeah, and he's just, you know, and I think Eddie Jackson is the kind of guy, I think he wants to play good football, and he just has to start to play better football. And instead of giving all those great quotes about the team, he should give a great quote about himself and say, look, I need to play better football. It's going to start with me, and I'm going to make these plays. And then I want to see him go out there and do it.
Olin, we'll let you go. Just quickly, as you look at it, Bobby Massey coming back to practice. Jermaine Ifedi seemed like he had – I didn't hear his name called much. Seemed like he had an okay game. Would you make a move there?
I think the offensive line has been playing well. I think there's a lot that goes into that decision, right? He's been out for a while here, right. Bobby Massey has. And I got to know if he's off completely 100%. And only they know that at Hallis Hall. But if Bobby Massey is 100%, he is a better right tackle than Jermaine Ifedi. So everything even, and he feels really good. Yes, I would put Bobby Massey in there. I'd leave the rest of the line the way it is with Alex Bars and Sam Mustafer and Cody Whitehair and Leno. But if he's anything below 90%, I don't put him in there. I suit him up as my swing tackle. At least he gives me a pretty good option as a backup. So 100%, yes, but I wouldn't move anybody else on that offensive line. But if he's not 100%, the answer would be no.
Olin, thanks a ton. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it, guys.
Olin Kreutz on the Mullion Haas Show today, Sports Radio 670. The Score, Joe Ostrowski here on a Monday evening. Thanks for listening and hanging out. The number, if you want to call or text, 312-644-6767, 312-644-6767. So I just saw this intriguing clip. Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, one of the national guys covering the league. And he's on the Score twice a week, every single week. He had some intriguing comments about the future of the Bears. And just for the 2021 season, is everything decided, like some are saying? Maybe not, says Florio. I want to bring you his comments and then react to them coming up next. So keep it here. Joe O Show, 670 The Score, and the Radio.com app.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.